So we're here on Daf Hey Amud Beis. We're going to go back to Daf Hey Amud Aleph again. We have to constantly, you know, review. And we're up to Mishum Maisa Shahoya. So let's see if we can find the place. I guess if you're counting down from the top, or maybe it's easier. You see a Tosis Di Ramaskel Ella?
Yeah.
So if we start from one line above that Tosis, you'll see the first word in the line is Lemishkel. So we're up to Mishum Maisa Shahoya.
So that's where we stopped yesterday.
And that's what I want to start today. Is that okay?
Okay, so no.
Again, the review is going to come a little bit later. We'll have to get a little bit of a. We'll have to make a little progress in the sugya. Then we'll be ready, hopefully, for the review. So let's just go over the last discussion that we had, Baal Peh, and then we could start with Mishum Maisa Shahoya. What we're talking about is the following. Reb Chia presents the credentials of his nephew Rav to Rabbi Yehuda Anossi, and he requests a threefold ordination. He requests Rishus of Yore Yore, Yodin Yodin, and Yatir Yatir. So two out of the three, Rebbe agrees. He confers on Rav the license to be Mora Hora B'Isa V'Heter. He confers upon Rav the status of Yodin Yodin. He's a Yachid Mumche, who, if he judges Yechidi alone, is covered by the insurance policy, at least in Eretz Yisrael, of the Netilas Rishus from the Nesiya Sanhedrin. But when it comes to Yatir, which means to determine that this Bechor has what's called a Mum Kavua, and therefore it's Posel Mizbech, it can be Shechted as Chulim, here, Rebbe becomes inhibited, and he refuses to confer on Rav that status of Yatir Bechoros. The Gemara suggests that is it possibly because Rebbe felt that Rav was not an expert in the laws of Bechoros? And the Gemara rejects that on two counts. First, because Rabbi Chia, when he presented Rav's credentials, he calls him Ben Achosi, which means that he is the personification of Chochmah, of wisdom. So there's no reason to suspect that Rav would not be an absolute expert on Bechoros, as he was on Kol Tarkula. And secondly, moreover, Rav himself elsewhere testifies that he spent a year and a half studying the Behemos, so he was certainly an expert to determine whether it had a mum or not. So why did Rebbe hold back as far as Yatir Bechoros? The Gemara gives two answers. The first answer, if you recall, was this was a political move on Rebbe's part for the sake of Rav Barachana. And the second answer was, and that's the answer that we're picking up today, that Rav was such a great expert that he found Mumin which you and I wouldn't have even seen. And when he discovered these Mumin, very often he would determine that it was a mum over and not a mum kavua, and therefore he would allow the shechita by assuming that. No, I'm sorry. He would determine that it was a mum kavua, not a mum over. That's what I meant to say, and therefore he would allow the shechita because he would say that this is a mum. Now people, let's call them the spectators, they saw that Rav was matir a particular mum, and they started making analogies and equations. They started coming to the conclusion that, wait, this animal that we have here, this Bechor, has a mum. It looks exactly like the mum that Rav determined was a mum kavua. This is also a mum kavua. So they begin to make analogies. They just begin to jump to conclusions. And Rabbi Yehuda Nasi was afraid that Dafka in the case of Rav, because he understood so much about the let's say the biology of the animals, he could come up with something which in a particular case for a particular species of animals would be considered a mum, but in a similar case for another animal, for example, of a different species, he would not consider it a mum, and people wouldn't be able to make that distinction. And therefore they would come to the mistaken conclusion that you're allowed to shech this animal as a balmum, and that was a terrible takola. So therefore Rebbe held back on granting Rav the status of Yatir Bechoros Yatir. Now, the question we want to ask here, and this is the last thing that we discussed yesterday, is as far as Yore is concerned. Remember that Rabbi Chia asked Rabbi Yehuda Nasi if Rav can get the okay and qualify to be Moreh B'Issa V'Heter. And here, Rebbe, with a resounding answer, he said Yore, he can determine. So the Gemara wants to know the following, and this is relevant to our smicha today. Why do you need Rishus from the Rebbe, from this case Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, to be Mora Hora? Either you know the law or you don't know the law. You got to be honest with yourself. And if you're honest with yourself because you're Gamir, meaning you know the law, then why do you have to take Rishus? You see, in the case of Dayanim, which is going to be a Ritz Hashem, our discussion of today when we just finished this last piece of Gemara, Dayanim need Rishus because otherwise they will not be covered with that insurance policy, if you recall. And again, we'll have to get into that. But as far as Yora is concerned, if a person looks at a chicken and he knows, based on his knowledge, that this is not a treifa, he could be Matir Achila. If he knows it's a treifa, he'll answer it. Why did Rebbe have to give, why did Rabbi Chia feel compelled to get from Rebbe the ordination, the recognition, and the permission for Rav that he could be Yora? Rishus Olam Ali LeMishkal. And basically this Gemara, although it's asking a question that's focused on one particular historical moment, it's really asking a question that's relevant for all times. Why do we need a smicha which is called Yore Yore? You know, the simple smicha that we get today, the classic smicha, is called Yore Yore. And that means that in Issa V'Heter, you can follow this rabbi's ruling. But what do we need that for? Well, why do we need the Tilus Rishus? In the case of Bezdin, for Dinei Mominus, you know, you need a court. So the court has to issue a verdict, and the verdict has implications, and it could even cause a loss to someone. You have to know if the Dayan has the status of a Dayan. But in the case of Issa V'Heter, Horas Issa V'Heter, if a person knows the law, He could be more hora. I mean, imagine if every single case in life, you know, that you had an issue, you had to get in the Tilus Rishus from the Nasi Sanhedrin. I mean, you wouldn't be able to budge from the spot. I mean, every second I have another question, you know. So what's the whole concept of smicha of Tilus Rishus? So I'll just read to you one line here from the Masifta, and he's basing it on Tosfos and other Rishonim. He says, "Ein letaretz, don't answer shenatal Rishus, that the reason why Rebbe wanted to get Rishus, I'm sorry, Rav wanted to get Rishus from Rebbe, is kedei lipater mitashlum as an insurance policy im yiteh bo ra'aso." He says, no. He says, as far as Horas Issa V'Heter is concerned, you don't need Rishus to be Mora Hora B'Issa V'Heter. Rishus nitna lo dafka b'dini mominos. That in dini mominos, in monetary law, you need this rishus in order to pater him up. But as far as Horas Issa V'Heter is concerned, there's no relevance, there's no connection between rishus and whether he's responsible or not. If he came to a conclusion and he issued a verdict, then he doesn't have to pay for that. That's the conclusion that his expertise led him. So why did this whole institution of getting Rishus LaHorah, Horah means Fisa V'Heter, what's the basis for that institution, for that enterprise? And what we're about to learn now is the following, that when a person gives a horah to someone else, his diction, his formulation, his language has to be crystal clear. And the Gemara is going to show us that if a Talmud who studied at the feet of his Rebbe goes out and gives a horah and he's not absolutely clear, he can be misunderstood, and that could have tremendous repercussions. It could have a very negative ripple effect. So that you're going to need Rishus, because otherwise, in the absence of Rishus, there's always going to be that fear that people will misunderstand you because you aren't clear in the way you spoke. The Gemara starts with one Maisa. We'll see another Maisa coming down the line. Now this Maisa has to deal with Machshirin. Machshirin means that foodstuffs, in order for them to be Makabel Tumah, if let's say a Sheretz lands on a piece of food, it needs what's called Machshirin. It has to have contact with one of seven categories of liquids. They are Yayin, Dam, Shemen, Cholov, Tal, Dvash Dvorim, Mayim. Any one of those seven, and that's based on a pasuk in Vayikra Yud Aleph, Mikol ha'ochel asher ye'ochel, asher yovol lov mayim yitma, v'chol mashka asher yishteh, and the Torah goes out of its way to include not only mayim, but kol mashke, and the kol mashke includes another six categories of liquids. So the six plus one, the one that's explicit in the Torah, is mayim. Now, as you and I know, the Medrash Halacha on Sefer Vayikra is called the Toras Kohanim, otherwise known as the Sifra. And the Toras Kohanim makes the following qualification. There's something called Mei Beitzim, which when you open up, if you crack open an egg, there's liquid inside the egg. Right? That liquid... Oh, Shalom Aleichem. Good to see you. I don't know if we're ready for the bracha or not. Okay. So the Torah's Kodim says that the word Mayim in the parsha of Kabbalah's Tumah is coming to exclude Mei Beitzim. Now, the reason why Mei Beitzim is not Mayim, even though probably on a... Well, I don't know, we have some scientists here in the audience. I think you'll tell me that Mei Beitzim is also Mayim, primarily. But it has what's called a Shem Levi. A Shem Levi means we don't call it Mayim, we call it Mayim of. You know, if we add an adjective in order to describe it, so the name includes something other than just pure Mayim, then it's not considered Mayim. We have it a different name. And that's called Mei Beitzim. So Rabbi says, as far as we're concerned, any mayim that you find anywhere is a machshir. It's one of the seven machshirim. But if it has a shem levi, for example, in the case of Mei Beitzim, then it is not machshir. Okay. Now what happened was that Pam Achas Holach Rebbe, and we want to know why Rebbe was the first to institute this ordination, as we call it, you know, the heter of Rishus Lahoros Isav Heter. He came to a Mokom Echad, he came to a certain place, and apparently in this place there were, shall we say, individuals who were less than great scholars. The Yerushalmi identifies this as Akko. Akko, even to this day, is, you know, has a mixed population. In any event, Halach Rebbe l'makomecha v'ra'a b'nei Adam, and he noticed that the people there, shemegablim, now there's something called gibul. Gibul means when you add water to flour and then you begin to knead it, right, with a K. That's called gibul. That's very relevant to the laws of challah, when you chayv to be mafresh challah. Anyway, what they were doing was, they were using for gibul what's called kelim tmeim, right? There are different types of utensils. And back in the day when there was truma and the kohen had to make sure that he was eating truma tahora and not truma tmeim, they were very careful that when they did the gibul, when they did the kneading of the dough, they would knead the dough in a bowl that was tar. And now Rebbe realizes that they, in this particular place, weren't mocked, but they weren't careful about it. They were Megablim Isoseya Bituma and Kalim Tmeyim. And they weren't worried about the fact that it would be Mitami the Isa. Amalehem, so Rebbe comments to them, Mifnei Matem Megablim Isoseyem Bituma, why are you doing this? You should use Kalim Tahorim, make sure that the Kli is Tahar. Amru Lo, so they responded, Talmud Echad Balakan. One of your students, or maybe Talmud means a Talmud Chacham, an outstanding scholar, came here, v'horolanu, and he taught us that mei bitsa'im ein machshirim. Now look at that word bitsa'im, which we're about to interpret. It sounds a little bit like what? Like beitzim, okay? Tosfos is going to make a big deal about the pronunciation here, and there's something called mei beitzim, and there's something called mei bitsa'im. And if you're not careful, when you say mei beitzim, you might have heard mei bitsa'im. Now the people of this area, when they heard this Talmud Chacham, who declared that mei bitsa'im eina machshirim, and he meant to say mei beitzim eina machshirim, because as we said before, in the name of the Torah's Kohen, the word mayim excludes a mayim that has a shem levi, which is called mei beitzim. They misheard, and they thought he meant mei bitsa'im. Now bitsa'im are, in Hebrew we call it agamim. Agamim are those puddles of water. You know, sometimes if you have a ditch or an open area that has the ability to receive rain, so the rainwater collects in these areas. That collection of water is called mei bitsa'im. But keep in mind, we only call it mei bitsa'im because of its location. It's located in Bitsayim. Bitsayim are these ditches that collect water. But as far as Halach is concerned, Mei Bitsayim is not called a Shem Levi. Mei Bitsayim is like any water on the face of the globe, and it has the status of a Makshir. And, you know, Rebbe was in shock over here, because what he realized was that these people are coming to the mistaken conclusion that Mei Bitsayim is not a Makshir. And Mei Bitsayim is a Makshir. All water on the face of the earth is a Makshir. There's a separate din of Mei Beitzim. You open up an egg and you have a liquid in the egg. That's not Metame. Vehu. And now the Gemara explains how these people came to this mistaken conclusion, because who? That Talmud may beitzim darash lehu. Darash means he taught them. What he taught them, or at least what he meant to teach them, was that may beitzim are not machshirim. And they misunderstood. Inu sovar, they understood may bitsayim ka'amar, that he was referring to the mayim of these agamim, of an agam, and they came to this mistake, and they therefore believed that the flour that they were mixing together with the water of mei bitsayim is not mekabel tumah. Even if the kli itself is tumah, but the kli does not transfer tumah to the flour, because the flour, flour, right, the flour is not mukshal lekabel tumah. It has not come into contact with any of the seven mashkim, because they misunderstood this Talmud Chacham as if he was saying that mei bitsayim, water that's collected in these agamim, is not considered a makshir. It's not included in mayim, and therefore there's no way that this flour could be mekabel tumah. But in truth, that's not what the Talmud had in mind. So that's the first example that the Gemara gives of a Talmud who somehow did not use a clear language. His language was misunderstood, and it had tremendous repercussions. And therefore, not every Talmud should take it upon himself, without getting licensed by his Rebbe, to be Mora Hora, even in Issa V'Heter, because he might be misunderstood. And Tosis here points out that the word mei beitza is very similar to mei beitzim. Now, beitza is the same word for agam. In plural, it's bitsaim, and it's similar, it's batzi. So mei beitzim, which sounds awfully similar to mei beitzim, is a different kind of entity. It's water that's collected, and that water is, in fact, a machshir lekabel tumah. But they didn't understand that he was referring to mei beitza, but not to mei beitzim. And that simple error from beitza to beitzim, from beitza to beitzim, beitza to beitzim, that error caused them a tremendous takala, that now all the all the challah that they were baking, all the breads that they came out of the oven were all tmeim. Why? Because the flour was in fact mushal kabel tum. You put it into a kli. The kli is a kli tamei. And could you imagine the takola if they would feed that truma to a kohen and a kohen's under the mistaken impression that's tar when it's really tamei? All because they thought that when this Talmud said may beitza, what he meant was may beitza. Beitza is an agamayim, and that led to a terrible mistake. The Gemara says another mistake. Vito nami baha. Here was another mistake that they made in interpreting a Mishnah. Now, this Mishnah that we're about to learn is in the 8th parak of Masechet Parah. I don't know how many people here learned Masechet Parah. I can't raise my hand. I never learned Masechet Parah. I know that my Rebbe used to quote his father, Rav Moshe, that he had a tremendous geschmack from learning Masechet Parah. Now, Masechet Parah, as you know, is all about one central concept, which is called Mechatos. So that means that if a person contracts Tumas Mes, he comes in contact with an Ola Mes, or he touches a corpse, he lifts up a corpse, etc., etc., then in order to be Metayer himself, so that he could go on to the Harabayis and enter into the Migdosh, or he could eat Kodshim, he needs what's called Hazah, Shlishi Vishvi, he needs Hazah of Mechatos. Now this Mechatos was a concoction of the Afer of Paraduma together with Mayim. Now this Mayim, and this is a very unique halacha in Mechatos, it does not apply to Makshirim. May Chatos has to be what's called Mayim Chaim. That's the beginning of Parshas Chukas. And there it says Mayim Chaim. Mayim Chaim means flowing water. Now flowing water has to be in a natural spring or in a river. And the Mishnah delineates and enumerates all the rivers that you can use and all the rivers that you can't use. There's certain rivers that are just collecting water, like, you know, the Dead Sea, you know, Dead Sea and stuff like that. So on that list, there's Carmion and there's Mepiga. Okay, if you're interested, you can look up an Aruch Laner on this sugya. I mean, he goes through exactly where these rivers are and what they are. They're in Syria and in some other countries here. In any event, these are excluded. Why? Because these waters are collected waters. They're not natural springs. And therefore the Mishnah establishes psulim. You cannot use these waters to mix them together with the Afer, the ashes of the Paraduma, to be Makadish, the Afer Paraduma, as mechatos for the purpose of Tara. Mipnei Shehem may bitsoyim, because these waters are collected. That's called an agam. Oh, so what did they think? This is going to support their interpretation of the story that we had before in Akko. Inu Sofer, they came to the conclusion, well, if there's one Mishnah, let's apply that rule of the Mishnah to the question of Makshirim. They didn't understand that Makshirim and the standards of Mayim for Makshirim and Mechatos and the standards of requirements of Mechatos are totally fundamentally different. Inu Sofer, the standards are the same. If the Torah doesn't recognize the water that comes from an agam, because it's not considered Mayim, but rather it's considered Mebitsoim, is therefore, let's extrapolate from this Mishnah in Mechatos to the question of Makshirim. The Mishnah of Makshirim lists 7 Makshirim. Akshirim nami lo Makshir. Apparently, when the Mishnah mentions Mayim, it's the exclusion of Mebitsoim. Vilohi. But this analogy was a mistaken analogy. Why? Hasam linyan mechatos. As far as mechatos go, be in mayim chaim. The Torah says mayim chaim. It's got to be natural springs. Me'agamim bitzayim, that are collected water. They don't have any natural source. That's not considered mayim chaim, and therefore the apostle linyan mechatos. Hacha, but here with regard to machshirim, the Torah says mayim. Achshuri called to machshirim. Any mayim is included. It doesn't matter whether the mayim is natural in a spring or whether the mayim is in an agam. It's collected in a marsh or whatever it might be. That's also considered machshirim. The only exception was the case of a beitzim. Tana, and we have a Braisa Biosa Shah. At that moment in time, when Rebbe realized that Talmidim could cause great mistakes if they don't clarify their psak, if they give a Mora a Horah, which is not completely clear, if it might be misunderstood, and as a result of this toes, you know, you can have terrible repercussions. Gazru, they made Xera. Talmud al Yoreh, a student, even though he knows the halach, he should not paskin. He should not issue a ruling, a horah, and isavet, ella imkein notel reshus meravo. And Rabbo said, this means that the Rebbe is not just going to test his student to make sure that his student can answer all the questions, but he also has to be very keen, he has to be very careful to make sure that the student will be absolutely clear in the way he formulates his horah, because otherwise people might get mistaken impressions, draw the wrong conclusions, make analogies. Therefore, a horah requires that you consider all possibilities of misunderstanding. So it's not enough to give the answer to the question that lies in front of you, but you have to make sure that the way you give that answer, no one will come to any other conclusions. And I'll tell you the truth, Rabbi, I'll say from my experience, it's so true. You know, you can have pots and pans and milchiks and fleishiks and ovens and this, that, and the other thing, and you get barraged by questions, and people, you know, they already paskin for themselves, because that's what he paskin for me last time. Well, maybe that time was Chometz Kodem Zman Isuro, and he doesn't know that Chometz Kodem Zman Isuro is at Teira Bola. He doesn't know the principles. And the Rebbe, when he paskins, he should make sure, for example, Shilas Noshim, you know, this is very, very common. You know, the Rav looks at the thing, and he says, you know, he starts this, examining it, and he comes to conclusions, Pachas Mikagris, said he's matir. Okay, but people then draw the conclusion that any time you see a stain, if it's Pachas Mikagris, it's mutter. That's not true. It's mutter in Ksomim, but it's not mutter in Bedikas. A Bedikas is an aid that goes into a woman's body. You know, there it doesn't matter whether it's Kagris or not Kagris. If it's a Kesem, that's something different. She finds a stain on a garment, so there was no argosha. That's it's a whole different story. So people come to the mistaken conclusions. Now, honestly, Rabosai, I think, again, maybe I shouldn't say this publicly, but it's Yardu Adoros. There's Yiridas Adoros. I think today smicha has become so common, you know, it's so classic, you know, get smicha, that, you know, maybe we're not careful about this kind of thing to make sure that the Talmud who's receiving smicha is really bucky, not just in the halachas, but also in the way he formulates, the way he teaches, and he transmits the halacha. We should be more careful about that. By the way, there are all sorts of cynical comments about ordination. Back in my day, when I was a kid, the cynical comment was that when you got smicha from Tiferes Yerushalayim, which is a great yeshiva, you got the smicha, and on the backside was Reb Moshe Feinstein's telephone number. Yeah. That was the joke in my day. And that may basically mean you don't have a paskin, so just know the phone number, you know, so you can call Reb Moshe and you'll get a psak. That was it in my day. Good. He has a note here. He says the following: Rishus Lodun Kolul Gam Ptur Mitashlumin. The Komakom Linyan Takana Zu Tzarch Rishus Al Kol Dover V'Dover. Now, even though the original Natil's Rishus is an insurance policy that the Dayan doesn't have to pay damages for compensating the loss, and has no implication for Isa V'Heta, but nevertheless, we require Netilas Rishus for Isa V'Heta, but it's a totally different type of concept. Now the Gemara is going to give us another story about a Talmud who was a great scholar, but he was misunderstood. Tanchum Bereder of Ami Iklo L'Cheser, or Choser, a name of a place called Cheser. So Tanchum finds himself in Cheser. Now, back at that time, there was a major issue about what's called lesisa. Lesisa means to take wheat before Pesach and soak it in water. And the question was, would that make it into chametz? Now, normally, when you take wheat and you grind it down and you make it into a flour, then any contact with any water will cause chimutz. But in its original natural state, a chita a kernel of grain will not ferment when it comes in contact with water. However, this was a matter of great controversy back in the day, because they actually tested it out and they found in certain cases, if there were certain kinds of cracks or what have you in the chita and you soaked it for a long period of time, it would in fact cause chametz, or at least it would speed up the process of chimutz, and therefore they asked it. But we're talking about a story that took place when this controversy was a hot topic on the table. You know, like every contemporary issue in any particular historical period, there are certain issues that are, you know, those are the hot issues in the day. Like, you know, today there's a whole issue about conversion, you know, the gerus, what constitutes gerus, and that sort of stuff. You know, people are fighting each other about gerus, or for example, use of the internet, you know, today. You know, there's so many things that go on in the internet that somebody calculated the possibility of 18 different violations of Torah law through the internet. And so these are controversial issues that are contemporary. So in that time of Tanchum, the hot issue on the table was lesisa, which is otherwise known as shriya. Shriya means to soak natural kernels of wheat and other grains into water before you grind them. And the purpose of the lesisa was simply to soften the kernel, and that would make it easier to grind it up and make flour out of it. And the question is, should we be choshesh for chimutz that lest it become chametz? So comes along Tanchum in a certain place called Cheser, Darish lu mutal lilsos chitin v'pesach. Lesisa, otherwise known as shriya, of chitin is mutter before Pesach. You can take these chitim, go ahead and soak them, and then grind them, and make your matzah out of them, and everything is fine. Now, until now, our discussion about Netilas Rishus of Yoreh Yoreh was focused on mistakes. We're not ready for that now in this context. In the context of Mei Beitzim and Mei Betzayim, that was the issue of a mistaken impression that the people got. Here, right now, again, we're gonna get to the issue of mistaken impressions, but right now the Gemara is going to focus on the following. We have a rule that Ein Talmud Moreh Halacha Bifnei Rabba. That a Talmud, even if he has Rishus from his Rebbe, will not paskin on an issue in the presence of his Rebbe. Now, what does it mean in the presence of his Rebbe? So basically it means if his Rebbe is anywhere in the vicinity. Now, what defines a vicinity? What's the circumference of the area? It has to do with something called Machne Yisrael, which is Gimel Parsos, Al Gimel Parsos. We'll get to that in just a minute. So Amru Lo, so the people of Cheser notified Tanchum, aren't you a student of Rebbe Mani? Lav Rebbe Mani de Min Tsar. Apparently there are a few different scholars by the same name, Rebbe Mani, and they were all on the Mani. They were on the money. I'm just joking. So anyway, this one came from Tsar. Tsar today is identified as Lebanon in the north. Ika Hacha, he's local. He's here in town. Maybe he's on a trip. He came from Tsar, and he's now here in Cheser. How could you go ahead and be Mora Hora? V'tanya, we have a brisa, Talmud al Yoreh Halacha b'makom Rabba. If the Rebbe is there in that vicinity, then you're not allowed to be Mora Hora. In fact, the Rambam codifies this in Hilchas Talmud Torah, and he writes that a Talmud is not allowed to be Mora Hora in the vicinity of his Rebbe. And we'll see the Lashon of the Rambam in just a minute. Elim Kain, the only time in which we allow the Talmud to issue a psak orah is in Mayarabo Rachok Mimenu Sholosh Parsos. If the Rebbe was at a distance of Sholosh Parsos from the Talmud. Okay, now he says here that Sholosh Parsos is the equivalent of Shneima Sarmil. Now, Shneimasar Mil is a pretty large area. Usually we assume that you could walk a mil in about, let's say, 18 minutes. So you're talking 18 minutes times 12. Who could do the math for me? That's 3. 96. How much is that? 96. So 96 minutes. I mean, that's a, you know, even if you're on you know, you're on a donkey, or if you're on foot, that's a quite a distance.
You said 18 times 12?
18 times 12.
That's wrong.
216. 216? Okay, fine. Anyway, what's going on over here? Rebbe Money is somewhere in the vicinity. So the Gemara answers, the Gemara gives the following answer. Okay, so where do we get, how do we calculate this Sholosh Parsos? That has to do with Machli Yisrael, connected Machli Yisrael. In the Midbar, there was an area which was called Machli Yisrael, and from that we're going to derive this calculation, this measurement called Sholosh Parsos. Amar Lahu, so Tanchum at this point catches himself and he says, Lavadatai. I had no idea that Rebbe Money was here in town. So that's one issue in terms of getting rishus from your Rebbe, that even if you get rishus from your Rebbe, nevertheless, in the presence of your Rebbe, if your Rebbe is in the greater vicinity, you're still not allowed to issue a psak. The Gemara tells the following story. Rebbe Chia, Chazi Elahu Gavra, he sees a person, Davi Koi Bebeis HaKvaros. Okay, so he noticed the guy that he's doing a mole in the Beis HaKvaros. Maybe it was his father's yard sign. I don't know. He went into the Beis HaKvaros. Amalei, so Rebbe Chiya said to him, Lav ben ish ploni, aren't you the son of so-and-so? Kohen ata. If your father was a Kohen, then you're a Kohen. What are you doing in a Beis HaKvaros? And if a Kohen goes into a Beis HaKvaros, he violates a Lav da Oraisa. And moral a Kohen and b'nei Aaron v'yamart olim l'nefesh lo yitam v'yamam. And included in that Isur Doraisa is going into a Beis HaKvaros, because Kvarim Amitamim, and that's the parish in Chukas, called Tumas Oel. So how is it possible that you are going into a Beis HaKvaros? Omar Le Avua Dehu Gavra, he talks about himself in third person. Instead of calling him my father, he says the father of that person, meaning my father. Giva einayim hava. He had very wide eyes. Now, if you remember, the pasuk says lo sasur achrei einechem. You know, einechem is zuznus. Einechem means when you have eyes and hungry eyes to see znus. When you want to have a relationship with a woman that you're not allowed to have a relationship with. V'nasan eina begrusha. And he fell in love with a divorced woman, and he married her. And I was born of that marriage. V'chilalo, a Kohen is born from a marriage of Isurei Kahuna, becomes a Cholol, and a Cholol is completely excluded from Kedushas Kahuna, which means he's not allowed to eat Truma or any of the Matnas Kahuna, he's not allowed to work in the Beis HaMikdash. And not only that, the good news is that he's allowed to be Metami himself, if you call that good news. Why? Because he doesn't have Kedushas Kahuna. So basically, this man, by his own admission, was a Cholol. Hence, he was allowed to go into a Beis HaKvaros. Now, how do you know that a Grusha is excluded from Kahuna? The Pasuk says in Emor, it says, V'isha Grusha mi'isha lo yikachu. And with regard to a Kohen who marries a Grusha, the Torah says, V'lo yechalel zaro bi'amav. And therefore, the child who's born from a Bia, from a relationship between a Kohen and an Isha Psula, in this case a Grusha, if he's a male, he's considered a Cholol. If a female is born, she's not allowed to marry into Kahuna. Now, it's not clear to me why this Gemara is here, why this story of, you know, until this point, I understand we were focused on Horah, and whether a Talmud is allowed to issue a Horah. So there were various limitations. If he didn't get Rishus, he might not be understood well. We spoke about the fact that his Rebbe is somewhere in the vicinity, and Al Yora Halacha B'Makom Rabbo. That I understand. But this last story, what's its shaychus over here? So there's a Rashi here, Divra Maskil Rabbi Chia. It's a very long Rashi, and I would like to just sort of summarize this Rashi, the highlights of the Rashi. He says the following: this Maisa of Rabbi Chia at the end of this sugya is coming to teach us. Sha'af shahamakom shebo ras osa the way makom shel Rebbe. This Maisa in the Beis HaKvaros took place in Rebbe's vicinity. Rebbe Chia was a Talmud of Rebbe. If you remember, Rebbe Chia was the one who got Rishus from the Rebbe, from Rebbe Yehuda Anasi, and then he passed it on to Rav Huna, etc., etc. And nevertheless, Rebbe Chia got very involved here, and he said to this Kohen, what are you doing in a Beis HaKavod? Get out of there. And he didn't. He wasn't inhibited about the fact that Rebbe was around. This adds another dimension to the halacha, says Rashi, of ein Talmud Rashoi Lahoros Halacha Memakum Rabba. That only applies when it's a theoretical ruling. But if it's lafrishas ha'odam isura, if a person is involved in an isur, you don't wait for the Rebbe in order to paskin, because every second he's violating an isur. So Rebbe Chia was not going to run around asking questions to his Rebbe, Rebbe Yehuda Anasi, when he realizes that this Kohen, every split second that he's in the Beis HaKvaros, he's violating an Issa Doraisa of being Machalis Kedushas Kahuna of Lo Yitame Biyama. Then Rashi quotes a Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi has a slightly different version of this last episode. And according to this version, the Maisa was in the son of a Kohen that became Tamei, and it didn't happen with Rabbi Chia, but it was actually Rebbe who saw two things in Akko. First, he saw the case of the Mei Beitzim, Mei Bitzoyim, and then he saw this person who was a Kohen. And he didn't mind. He wasn't hesitant about going into Beis HaKvaros. Now, in the Yerushalmi, it doesn't say that Rebbe saw this Kohen, the son of a Kohen, in a Beis HaKvaros, but rather, listen carefully, Omad b'ktzei ha'ir shemichutz l'gvul Eretz Yisrael. He was standing at the end of the city, and it was on the other side of the boundary of Eretz Yisrael. Akko is always considered the northernmost city in Eretz Yisrael, but the top of Akko, meaning the northern part, is outside of Eretz Yisrael. So what's so terrible? So for this you have to know a sugi in Gittin, which is called Tumas Eretz Amamin. Now, don't ask me any practical questions, but in theory, a Kohen is not allowed to go to Chutz Laaretz, because we always assume in Chutz Laaretz that the whole of Chutz Laaretz is considered like a Beis HaKvaros. You don't know who's buried where. So the question was, since your father was a Kohen, what allows you, that's what Rebbe asked him, to go to the north of Akko and be metame yourself with Tumas Eretz Amamin? And therefore, the reason why this story is quoted is because this is a hemshech of the beginning story of Rebbe, where Rebbe came to Akko and he saw people that were kneading their dough with mei bitzoyim. So this is also another piece in that episode of Rebbe and his encounter with Akko. We could write a book called Rebbe and Akko. And it's not Rebbe Chia, according to the Yerushalmi, but rather it's Rebbe. Now, the Gemara of Pesachim on Daf Mem records a machlokes about Lasisa, whether Lasisa in Chitim is mutter for Pesach, or should we be afraid of Chimutz? Rabbi Tanchum here in our sugya is of the opinion that people are very careful when they do this Lasisa, they make sure that it doesn't come with a Chimutz. However, the poskim say that today we're not such a bucky, we don't know exactly how to do this lasisa, and therefore asur lilsos. And no one should do this lasisa on chitin. Now the last thing that I wanted to mention here from the footnote here is this concept about Machne Yisrael. The Gemara identifies Machne Yisrael as an area of Shalosh Parsos, which we said was Shnei Masar Mil. And this is all based on a pasuk at the end of Sefer Shmos. It says, V'hoya kol mevakish Hashem yotzel ol moed Hashem yichutz l'machne. So those who had a question, and they lived on the end of the Machne, the outer boundaries of the Machne, they would turn to the Ol Moed of Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, to get to Moshe Rabbeinu, they'd have to walk, if they were on the extreme end of the Machne Yisrael, they'd have to walk a distance of Gimel Parsos. Why did they have to do so? Why couldn't they just find a Chacham within Gimel Parsos instead of schlepping all the way to the Ol Moed to ask Moshe Rabbeinu? And this is really a question that Yisro asked. You know, why is everyone waiting to get a hold of you, Moshe Rabbeinu? But the answer is, as Rashi says here, B'dibra Maskil Keneged, that there's halacha that a Talmud is not allowed to be Moro Ro within Gimel Parsos. So even if they found a Talmud, but all the scholars in that generation were Talmidim of Moshe Rabbeinu, they'd have no right to elicit a response and a ruling from any Talmud because Moshe Rabbeinu was within the three Parsos. That's fine. But Rashi now asks Akasha. Moshe actually set up his tent 2,000 amah outside the Machne. So therefore, the Shoalim, who were on the outskirts of the Machne, they didn't have to go all the way to the Ol Moed to ask Moshe a question. All they would have to do would be to go 2,000 amah. So let me read to you the presentation here of the Masifti. He writes, Hasholim agorim b'ktzei hasheni shal hamachne holchu elov, they went to Moshe Rabbeinu, yoser migimel parsos, they were beyond Gimel Parsos. Okay, so he says the following. Okay, maybe I'll just... do we have... No? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, you have something? Okay, I need to erase something. Okay, he's drawing the picture of Rashi. This is Rashi. Rashi's diagram, we don't have it on the page, but looks like this. That the Ol Moed is here. Okay. Moshe Rabbeinu pitches his tent 2,000 amah away from the Ol Moed. The Shoalim are here on the boundary of the Machne. The Machne is from here to the Ol Moed is three parsos. Right? So then, what kind of a distance did these people have to walk, traverse, or whatever the family fancy word is, in order to get to Moshe Rabbeinu? It would be Gimel Parsos plus 2,000 amah. So Rashi says, couldn't they find a Chacham somewhere within this area? The answer is no, because a Chacham can't be Mora Hora Bifnei Moshe Rabbeinu Bifnei Rama. Now let's assume, for argument's sake, that there's a Talmud Chacham right over here. So the Sholim could have asked the Talmud Chacham. No, they had to walk all the way this distance in order to find Moshe Rabbeinu. Then why is the shir Gimel Parsos? The shir should be Gimel Parsos. V'yesh less or gam b'merchak shal yoser mi Gimel Parsos. V'tirit shedafka mishum gdulosel shal Moshe nagu lo lishal acherim af b'yoser mi Gimel Parsos. So Rashi says there are two dinim here. The official din that you can't issue a ruling within the vicinity of your Rebbe's within the close proximity. So that's within three Parsos. That's defined by the Machne. And that's why it says in the Pasuk Vayim Avakesh, whoever had a question is Yatzach Chutz LaMachne. Then there's another din, which is Kvodo Shel Moshe Rabbeinu. And because of the Gdula of Moshe Rabbeinu, the special status, they wouldn't ask anyone other than Moshe Rabbeinu, even though it meant adding another 2,000 amah to the Gimel Parsos. So technically, as far as Moro Rob, if they Rabo, it would be Mutter within this Gimel Parsos. But, because Moshe Rabbeinu was again, certain area, but Moshe Rabbeinu was far outside the Machta, but there's a din of Gedulah Shel Moshe. So I'm not exactly sure what the nature of this din of Gedulah Shel Moshe is. It's possible that Moshe Rabbeinu's status as a Mora Ra was a unique status. The Gemara says that Moshe Rabbeinu had the status of a Beis Din of Ayin Aleph. And that means that he could paskin on the most the most serious or severe issues as a one-man show. He represents Bezin Shel Ayin Aleph. So it could be the following, that as a general rule in terms of Mora Hora and Rebbe, you can't be Mora Hora in front of your Rebbe, but there's a new halacha here of Moshe Rabbeinu and his status as the Bezin HaGadol. He represents, so to speak, the sanctity and the greatness of all the 71 elders put together in one, you know, in one individual. His goof is a personification, so to speak, of 71 elders, and that generates a din of kavod. The other possibility is simply to say that Moshe had a din of a melech. Now, normally, a melech is not a mora hora, but Moshe Rabbeinu he wears two hats. You know, he's the final lawgiver of hora, and he's also a melech. Vayi Bishru Melech is reference to Moshe Rabbeinu. So maybe the din of geduas Moshe Rabbeinu here expresses itself in not being mora hora within any proximity, even a wider area, if Moshe Rabbeinu is there. The Rambam codifies this halacha in Hilchas Talmud Torah Perek Hei, and he says the following. Says the Rambam, even Chutz LeGimel Parsos, when the Talmud is allowed to be Mora Hora, because his Rebbe is more than a distance, further than a distance of Gimel Sos, Hu Dafka B'Derech Aroy, only on a temporary basis. Now, there's a question came up. Abel Ahoros Bofa Kavu, if he sets up a, you know, a base hora, you know, he sets up a permanent, you know, I have hours from 3 to 5 in the afternoon, come and ask me questions. Asur, calls Mancha Rabo Chai, as long as his Rebbe is alive. And he says that, the Rambam says that for this, if you want to be more hora on a kavua way, in a permanent way, and your Rebbe is alive, he says for that you have to have a special permission from your Rebbe that even during his lifetime he allows you to be Mora Hora as a, you know, to set up shop, so to speak, as a Mora Hora. Okay. Now, Rabosa, I gave out some pages yesterday. Does anybody have those pages? Okay, so who needs a copy of the page? I just have to make sure I don't give you my copy, because then I won't be able to say what I want to say. Okay, so let me just see how many copies we have here. Just one second. Okay, so I'm going to save one copy for myself. Okay, so every two pages here is a set. And on the top right it should say Nun Ches. And then on the top left it should say Nun Tes. I have one more copy if anyone needs. Everybody has? If anybody else wants? Okay, you can. Alright.
One more note there.
Alright. Oh, now I gave up my noon tet. Oh,
yeah,
that's not good. Okay, I'm sorry. Alright. Now, Rashi on Yochid Mumchal Rabim. Rashi insists that we're going according to the Vadi Omar, Ein Kan Erev Parshios. This was the top Rashi on Daf Hey Amid Aleph, because Sover Ein Kan Erev Parshios, Hey Amid Aleph on top. Now, Tosis raises the following question on Rashi. The Gemara says about various Amoraim, Kigon Anna, that Gemirna Usvirna Unikitna Rishusa, that the Yochid Mumche boasts about three qualifications that he has. He is number one, Gomir, he's a Baki in the Halacha. Number two, Savirna, he understands the underpinnings of the Halacha. Number three, he is Nikitna Rishusa. He has Rishus from the Reish Galusa to serve as a Dayan. And the Gemara then vacillates back and forth whether you need that third condition is absolutely critical or not. So Tosa says the following. it would seem that, at least according to one side in the Gemara, in the absence of Nikitas Rishus, in other words, you didn't have the okay from the Reish Galusa, then your din, your judgment, is not a valid judgment. Again, that's not the final conclusion of the Gemara, but that's certainly the Havamina of the Gemara, because when it says Kigon Ana, the Gemara thinks Kigon Ana means the Gemirna Savirna Nikitna Rishusa. I need Kabos Rishus from the Reish Galusa. And that's absolutely critical. Otherwise, in the absence of Rishus from the Reish Galusa, I cannot be a Don Yechidi. I cannot serve as a single judge, you know, as a one-man show. I don't know what English word I could use. So Tosis has a problem with this, because this Gemara only makes sense, says Tosfos, if you hold Erev Parshios Ksiv. What it means by Erev Parshios is that the Torah requires three Elohims. In other words, three judges, each of which has the status of a Yachid Mumche. Correct? That's called Erev Parshios Ksiv Kan. So if you're telling me that three Yachid Mumches is the absolute minimum requirement on the Torah level, then you can begin to understand why a single Yachid Mumcha, when the Torah requires three, that's called Erev Parshios Ksivkan, when the Torah says that one Yachid Mumcha is enough, well, how could that be? You can't say that a Yachid Mumcha is enough, one Yachid Mumcha. The Torah requires three. It says Elohim three times, and Erev Parshios Ksiv. So the answer to the Gemara is called Nikitna Rishusa, that the only way that you could upgrade the status of one judge to equal three judges is through this extra condition of Nikitna Rishusa. You follow Rabbi Osei? On a Doraisa level, and this is going to be the Shita Rabbi Avo that we're going to get to today, I don't know if we'll get to today, but it's on Daf Hey. Rabbi Avo, it's Erev Parshas Ksiv. And we're gonna require the Torah is gonna require three judges, each of which is a Yachid Mumcha. And now we're establishing, based on this price that we're learning here on Daf Hayim and Aleph, that one Yachid Mumcha could serve as a one man show. How is that possible when the Torah requires three? And the answer is that there's something called Nikitna Rishusa. That Nikitna Rishusa is going to change the status of this Dayan and elevate him to the status of a Bezdin. Let's call it Hefker Bezdin, whatever the operating principle is, that the Reish Galusa has the power and the authority to take a Yachid Mumcha and elevate him to the status of Don Yechidi. That you don't need three Elohims, all you need is one Elohim. So again, Elohim means he's Gemira Usvirna. He has all the qualifications intellectually, but yet he can't judge Yechidi. Elo what? We're gonna have some sort of a new breakthrough based on the authority of Reish Galusa. Now I understand why you need Rishus, Nikitna Rishusa. But if we go back to Rashi, and Rashi's assuming that our sugi reflects the shita of Enkan Erev Parshios, which means that the Torah never required three experts, three mumchim, in order to make up a bezdin, then basically we're holding like another shita that disagrees with Rabbi Avo, again on Daf Hey, we'll get to it, that's this sugya of Shmuel. And Shmuel doesn't even require, on a Doraisa level, doesn't even require Yochid Mumcha. Right? Because there's no, with regard to Gzelos and Halvos, the Torah never said Elohim. So you don't need a Yochid Mumcha. So now you have a new halacha that you can rely on the ruling of one single Yochid Mumcha. Why do you have to add Nikitna Rishusa? On the contrary, on a Doraisa level, you don't even need a Yochid Mumcha. Elohat Rabbanon made a takana that we should require three judges, but they don't have to be experts. They don't have to be Gemirna or Svirna. Now you want to tell me that the Rabbanon allow and recognize a Yachid, he's equivalent to three. The answer is he's equivalent to three because he's a Gemirna or Svirna, whereas the other three Dayanim are not Mumchim at all. He's a Mumcha. Why do you have to add another condition of Nikitna Rishusa? Okay, we're going to have to stop here, but again, let me just summarize the last point, because I believe that I want to pick this up tomorrow. So again, I hope I'm not going to lose you here, but I feel that we're really setting, you know, we're setting down the fundamentals here for Masechta Sanhedrin, and if we miss this, we might miss, you know, the whole forest for the trees. So let me mention the trees here. The Gemara has a tzad to say that when a yachid mumcha, according to this price, could judge yachidi, so save me the frustration of having to translate the word yachidi over and over again. Can I get your tkiyas kaf on that, your agreement? The word yachidi means one judge. So the Gemara thinks that he needs rishus. He's got to get a permission from the Reish Galusa. Tosus says, I don't understand. That concept of Rishus from the Reish Galusa to elevate this judge to the highest status that he can be Dan Yechidi, that makes sense. Dafka, according to Rabbi Avo, who holds that Erev Parshas Ksivkan, which means the Torah requires three judges, and each one is a Yachid Mumche. Now you want to tell me, well, one judge is enough. How is one judge enough? He's got the qualifications of Gemirno Svirno. He's a great Baki. He's a Yachid Mumche. But we need three Yachid Mumches. The Torah repeats Elohim three times. And that's called Eru Parshis Ksivkan. Ah, you want to have a breakthrough that now someone who in and of himself alone, Yechidi, could not qualify according to the Torah law, because Elohim repeats itself three times, you'd have to add another element to the equation and elevate him beyond the Yachid Mumche. He's not just Gemir no Svirna, because as Gemir no Svirna, he would not be capable of being Dan Yechidi. So what's going to be the icing on the cake that takes him over the boundary line and gives him a special status that he can be Dan Yechidi? The answer is Nikitas Rishus. But according to you, Rashi, we're going with not the sheet of Rabbi Avo, but the sheet of Shmuel, who says Ein Kan Erev Parshios, which means the Torah doesn't require three experts. The Torah requires anyone, even a Yechidi, who's not a Yachid Mumche. The Rabbanan said, you know what, we're afraid of a Rabbak or whatever it is, we're going to require three judges. Oh, now you have someone who's a Yachid Mumche. A Yachid Mumche. He's way beyond the level of those three ordinary judges who are Hedyotos. Why do you need to keep this Rishus? The whole institution of requiring three judges is all a rabbinic institution. The Yachid Mumche is greater than the three judges who are not experts. Why do you have to add a Nikitas Rishus? So tomorrow, Mirtz Hashem, we're going to try to pick this up and see if we can defend Rashi. Okay then? Now, once again, as I said to you yesterday, the choice is yours. Either hold on to these pages or you give them back to me and I'll give them to you, whatever you prefer. I have no preference.
According to Rashi,
the Shia is officially over. Yeah, go ahead.
The three repetitions of Elohim, what does Rashi use those three for? If you hold in.
Oh, that's only for Gzelos.
Only for Gzelos.
Correct. Gzelos and Chavolos.
Everybody agrees that.
Yeah, Gzelos and Chavolos is where it says in the parasha. Erev parasha means we're going to lift it up and we're going to put it into a different parasha of Dini Mominos. So Gzelos and Chavolos, which is the parasha of Shomrim, if you have a chumash, I'll show it to you inside, where it says Elohim three times, if you open up the parasha's Mishpatim, that's a case of Gneva. Because the Shomer is denying that he ever got the object. He's got it stashed and he's locked up in, you know, wherever he's locked it up. That's called Gneva. Here, the Torah has a very high standard of, it's almost like criminal law as opposed to civil law. And, right, 10:30, Rabbi Osei, is good? Okay, 10:30. So here, the Torah ups the ante and requires three experts. Yeah? Three experts. But in Dine Mominus, which monetary law, which is not Gneva, here the Torah doesn't say Elohim. Elohim means a judge. That's why I say it. It's not God's name. Just going to read the psukim inside. This is in Perek Chav Beis. Kitein ish el re'eu kesef okeim lishmar v'gunav mi beis ha'ish imi motzea ganov yishalim shnayim. So this is good. The Shomer is off the hook because we have two witnesses testifying that guy stole it. But in Lo Yimotzei HaGanov, now the question is, where is the object? You know, you're telling me he was stolen. You know, we put up wanted dead or alive. We couldn't find the Ganav. Maybe the Shomer stashed it away. So then it says three times Elohim. V'nikrav balavais el Elohim. So that's a shvua which he takes in front of the judges. And that shvua includes lo shalach yado meleches reyehu. Then al kol dvar pesh al shor chamor etc. Yomar ki uzeh ad Elohim yofosh bashnem. So this is a case where the Shomer says, you only gave me one sheep, and really, and according to the Tovea, he gave him two sheep, so that's called Modu Mimiktsas. And this is the source for Modu Mimiktsas, and he has to take his sheep. And then a third time it says, Asher Yarshin Elohim. So the Gemara back on that base on the base that we did at the beginning of our Limud says that the three Elohims are teaching me three judges, and they have to be mumche, they have to be absolute experts, they have smicha and the whole 9 yards. But this is only in the case of Gneva, where we're accusing the Shomer of actually stealing the object. Then we have a parsha later on of Imkesef Talves Ami. This is already what's called Halvos. Now here, I'm just going to say it pedagogically, how many times does the word Elohim appear? Zero. So it doesn't say the word Elohim. So this is Shmuel's Shita, that in Halvos, which is your classical case,
really
about, there are no standards. You know, one judge would be enough. And even that one judge doesn't have to be a mumcha. So now the Rabbanim made a takana, we need three judges. That's embodied in our Mishnah at the beginning of Sanhedrin, that Didi Mamanis Pishlosha. Okay, Dini Mamnis Bishlosha. But those Shlosha are not Mumchim.
Hedyotos.
They're Hedyotos. Now the Rabbanan said, you know what? One Yachid Mumch is just as good as three. What makes him into a Yachid Mumch? He's an expert. Factosis, I don't understand. According to Shmuel, why is there a Havamina that he needs Natilus Rishus from. What does it accomplish? But if you hold like Rabbi Avo, which is called Erev Parashia, so we take the three Elohims and we apply them to Kesef Talvis Ami, which means that in Dini Alvos we need a basin of three experts. Now, if you're going to tell me that one expert is enough, what does he have? What are his great credentials when the Torah says about that very individual that he's got to have two buddies with him on the same level?
Right.
So the answer is Natilus Rishus.
Right.
Again, we haven't answered the question yet because we got to build up. But we understand the need for Natilus Rishus.
Right.
We're taking a Yachid Mumcha.
So Rashi says that he says have to base in heaven. He says it works. That level of Shevet is a
Hefker. Correct. I'm not denying Hefker. I don't think I argued with you at that point.
The question is, why the Reish Galusas, Hefker, Best, and Hefker, why that reaches all the way to Eretz Yisrael?
If the Torah recognizes him as the ultimate Shevet, meaning as the ultimate Bezdin,
anywhere in the world he can do Hefker.
Now for that, if you want to research that further, you might, you know, just to make life easier, you might take out the Encyclopedia Talmudit. Has a whole chapter called Hefker Bez and Hefker. If you have the time. I don't know if I'll have the time.
Okay.
We actually have it in the computer. So if you don't have your own, if you don't have your hard copy, you can just simply take a second. You'll get it all right up there. All right then. Okay, good. It's good.
Somebody who has only Yura, and it comes to a Indian of Mamanus.
Right.
So he rules that trefa is only a trefa midrabanan. So the Chenvani sold him a trefa midrabanan. Once he eats it, he has no can't be tovei on the Chenvani.
You mean because his hora would not have the impact of Dini Mominus? You mean because he's...
I'm just saying, halakha...
He's only got Yora Yora? Is that what you mean?
If a store owner sells something that only is a trefa midrabanan, somebody buys it, beta'ut, and eats it, so he has no taina on the chanut. He can't...
To get his money back?
Yes, that's the halakha.
I would say it should be a mechach tos. I don't know why.
It's a mechach tos, but once he got hanah from eating it, I just.
Oh, I see. Because he ate it already.
Because he ate it already, he has no taina in Beis Din, right? So it turns out that the yura, the paskin, that thing is a
trade from
the Rabbanan, comes to a monetary issue. I assume that you need...
When you say it comes to monetary issue, if he didn't eat it, or if he already ate it. Because you're saying like this, if I understand you correctly, if he didn't eat it, give me back my money. So then the hora that it was treifa is now relevant to dini momenus. So if on the other hand he ate it already, then there's no relevance to dini momenus.
Right. So well, let's say Paskin said it's a derisa treifa, so then he can get his money back. It's going to come to a
dini momenus, even though he only has yora yora.
Only in Leah's yora.
So that again, I think, is the lumbus of the Pnei Yoshua and others, that once you paskin in dini isa v'heter, then it has implications in dini momenus. You don't need a new hora in dini momenus. I would assume. Again, I'm not. Okay. Sure. Okay.